my study, the career pattern study, as I've indicated, my subjects are now only in their late 30s. But we found, for example, that there is a good deal of floundering going on in this period here. In fact, we've analyzed coping behaviors. What we call coping behaviors into several categories: drifting, floundering, call this drifting, stagnating, because in drift, well, let me comment on it, and we'll get the rest of it up there. Exploring should come after floundering. What we have then is, as we study the vocational behavior, career behavior of people in the teens and 20s and on into the 30s. There's no rigid cutoff point. There's some people who drift or stagnate all their lives. We're talking about the frequency with which we observe certain behaviors. All right, in the teens and 20s, there is a great deal of drifting or stagnating behavior. Drifting is moving with the tide, going where circumstances take you. Well, obviously, sometimes there is no tide, and so one is not moved by circumstances. One stagnates. Somebody raised this kind of question last night, and we had a little discussion of the fact that some people do get into some place that isn't appropriate. But they stay there. They don't move out. They don't have either the internal drive nor external circumstances that move them out and around. Floundering, as I pointed out last night, is having some notion that you ought to be getting somewhere, wanting to get somewhere, but either not knowing where or not knowing how, not having a good method. So there's some movement, but it's rather random. Let's take by analogy the fish that has been tossed up on the shore. He flounders, doesn't he, trying to get back into the water. He has an objective, getting into the water, but he doesn't really have a good way of getting there. Depending on what sort of terrain he's on, he may not even know where the water and how the breeze is blowing. He may not even know where the water is. So he doesn't really, he knows where he wants to go, but he doesn't know where that objective is. And neither does he have a good way of getting there, since he can't move well on land. So that's floundering. Next we have exploring. This is a higher grade of behavior. See, this is a scale from the lowest form of behavior to a next higher, to a next higher, to a next higher, and to the highest form of coping behavior. So the third level of exploring, of coping behavior, vocational coping behavior, is exploring. That is, not just floundering around, but having some notion both of where you want to go and of how you want to get there. Columbus, for example, was an explorer. He wanted to see if sailing west instead of east, you could get to the Indies. Notice I said west. He didn't propose to go north or south in order to get to the Indies. He had a notion that the best way, if you weren't going east, the best way to get there was to go west. And he explored in order to find out if this was true. So an explorer has some notion of what his objective is, where it is, and how to get there. Systematic behavior. Supper last night, because of my weird schedule, several of us went out and had supper afterwards. Some of us got into each other's careers. You know, how did you get into this? How did you get, asking each other, you know, what's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this? We have a kind of question. And one of the things I brought out in my own career, that my first post-college employment was exploratory. I had a degree in the social sciences. I didn't know whether I wanted to be an economist or a psychologist or a sociologist or a historian. I got two half-time jobs, which enabled me to try out some of these things, and in the course of experience, decide which it was I wanted to do, and then go ahead, go back to graduate school, or rather go on to graduate school, get a graduate degree. After I had explored, I started instrumental behavior. I decided, after 3 years' experience, sampling several things, that I wanted to be a psychologist and I wanted to work in vocational guidance. And so I did something about it. Instrumental behavior is implementing, making true, taking steps to accomplish what you want to accomplish. And that, in my case, was going to graduate school, getting a higher degree. And then, well, there are other illustrations of instrumental behavior too. For example, one may find, let's say, a very able high school student who wants to be a physicist and who is working as a short order cook. If one went by his work history, one would say he must be drifting or floundering. You know, what is a bright student who wants to be a physicist doing as a short order cook? But then one finds out that he's earning some money to put himself through school. And by working as a short-order cook in a diner, he can have hours which enable him to get to class and get to the laboratory and so on. So the irrelevant employment, career-wise, for him is highly relevant because it's instrumental. It makes it possible for him to move toward his objective. So that's instrumental vocational behavior or instrumental coping behavior. And then stabilizing is the highest form in this process in here, this period in here. Stabilizing is the highest form in which, having explored and taken the necessary steps, one is now in the occupation and making a place for himself. Now, obviously, the coping behaviors could be expanded. I'm dealing only with the coping behaviors here of the teens and 20s, because as one gets to decline, there may be other kinds of coping behaviors.
What category would you put a person in that made a decision to go on to graduate school to study in a special area, but while they're in it, they're finding that their study isn't leading them to something that they want to be? So really, it would appear that they're instrumenting, but in a way, they might be floundering.
Or he may be recycling. Okay. If he's finding that what he is doing isn't what he wants, he, if he is a planful person, then will be looking into some other possibilities, getting some data to help him decide on which, and then, so he's exploring. He goes, having explored and decided what the new field is, let's say the engineering student who finds that engineering really isn't what he wants, as about 40% of freshman engineers do. So he then looks into business administration and so on. And having done some exploring there, he then shifts to business administration. That's instrumental behavior, and then moves ahead and stabilizes, let's say.
Do you see many people, though, that do their exploring, I guess I'm saying, through instrumenting? Because I think I see people that make decisions to start carrying out a plan before they properly explore. So their exploration is really through a lot of maybe semi-successful instruments.
Very good point. Let's remember this as a sequence, is a hierarchy of quality of behavior. It doesn't necessarily mean that everyone goes through each of these steps in sequence. Neither does it mean that any one of them is done well. The reason I got into this, remember, was because of questions about these stages and the cutting points. And the question the lady over here asked, are the data of 30 or 40 years ago still good? I've been going a long way around, but my behavior has been instrumental, and I've now set the stage for answering the question. In the career pattern study, we found, and I think this bears on your point also, we found that about half of our subjects were engaging in drifting or floundering behavior during the years after leaving high school. In other words, from 18 to 25, about half of them have been floundering or drifting. And some of that was engaging in what they thought was instrumental behavior, but it turned out to be the wrong kind of instrumentation, an inappropriate kind. And so they had to begin over again because they had done it badly. They had done their exploring badly before. It was premature. The engineer, the high school student who always wanted to be an engineer and goes into college, engineering college, and finds out in his freshman year that engineering isn't for him, is one you see who has really done inadequate exploring. He's instrumented prematurely, and so he has to loop back and do it over again. Now, we also found that by age 25, at age 25, about 75% of our young men were engaging in stabilizing behavior. In other words, the majority had finished, or seemed to, you know, 25, we may have been wrong, but at 25, just observing what they were doing, analyzing what they were doing, 25% had finished drifting or floundering and or exploring, and were stabilizing in something. They were settling down, to put it in everyday language. They had found something that seemed to make sense to them, and that they thought they would stay with, maybe not for the rest of their lives, but at least for some time. Now, what we haven't analyzed yet, this kind of thing, I'm afraid, takes too long a time, but we're in the process now of analyzing the age 36 data. And one of the questions we're asking ourselves, how many of the 75% who seemed to be stabilizing at 25, looking back now from age 36, had actually stabilized? How much of it was false or premature or pseudo-stabilization? How many of them got shook up, if I may use the slang term, in one way or another, and had to recycle again and find something else and stabilize in another way? I don't really have the answer to that yet. Well, you made 2 points, if I'm following you, and one of them I would agree with, the other thing I'd disagree with. One is, not everyone has a purpose, wants to explore, wants to analyze experience, and I think this is true. But I don't think that the planful decision making, problem solving approach that I've been outlining and suggesting assumes singleness of purpose. If you have several purposes, it seems to me it'd be more important to look ahead and to plan than if you have just one. It's much easier to do one thing at a time than it is to do two or three. If you want to do two or three things at a time, you darn well better look ahead and plan.
But that wouldn't be economy.
Oh yes, it would be economy. Yeah, well, yes, because if you have several purposes, achieving them requires thinking about how to accomplish them with maximum economy. Now, yes, doing two, three things at once may keep you from doing any one of them as fast as you would if you did only that. But if you have the three objectives, then the greatest economy is planning so that you can do all three. More or less simultaneously with maximum economy. Economy of effort doesn't mean attaining just one goal. Economy may be of effort. May really be in achieving three goals. Because if you want all three and concentrate on one, you may get it faster, but you may delay or make impossible the attainment of the others. If we think of life as taking place on several stages,
or in several arenas. One is the occupational, the vocational. Another is the domestic or marital or whatever, the homemaking, whatever we want to call it. Another is the civic. There are, in other words, we play several kinds of roles, don't we? We have in each of these different objectives. And one might be in the establishment stage, well along in the establishment stage, occupationally, vocationally, and still in the exploratory stage, domestically, in terms of marriage and homemaking. And maybe in the maintenance stage, although I don't think this combination is too likely, in terms of civic roles. I don't think that personal development moves simultaneously pari passu, in other words, equal steps at a time, in all these different spheres. Now, one might say that the really best integrated life, I'm not sure that I want to say this, I'm willing to contemplate the thought and accept or reject it, but I'm inclined to accept it, that the best integrated person would be moving ahead at about equal speed in these different domains. That establishment in the domestic or marital role, establishment in the occupational role, establishment in civic roles would go more or less simultaneously. I guess I'd suggest the civic role probably comes a little later, establishment in it. And this is not just guess, observation, case studies, suggests that preoccupation with occupational role and marital role consume most of one's energy and time in here. And this is shown, incidentally, by studies of hobbies and avocations. People in this period don't have much in the way of hobbies and avocations, typically. They get active again in hobbies and avocations in their early 30s. In other words, they've begun to establish their occupational and their domestic career patterns, whether domestic career pattern means being single or married. And they then have time to start community activity, to start to resume golf or to resume tennis or to take up cabinet making or photography or whatever it may be. So there is some sequencing of attention. But I would think the best integrated personality and the most successful career would involve stabilizing and getting established in the domestic and occupational spheres at roughly the same time. And without great delay then, getting established in the civic, you know, PTA, service club, whatever it may be, and in the avocational realms.
When you talk about the healing in the 30-second recession, and you said you're going back to see whether or not the choices that they made at like 25 really were correct. At the time that they made that particular choice, if their development and whatever led them to that choice. And then, you know, you're a different person at 35 or 40 or whatever than you were at 25. Then at that time, why would that be considered floundering or not balanced?
I think it's a good point. I think it depends on how operationally we use these terms. As if we define stabilizing as getting into something and staying with it, then changing as ipso facto, either being disestablished or re-exploring, not necessarily floundering, re-exploring and then stabilizing in something else. And that would be a good kind of behavior. If the change is because of changes in the person and in the situation that make this a constructive kind of coping. I think then one has to take not just the fact of change, but one has to look at what's happening in the person and in the situation in which he finds himself. In most instances, as I say, we haven't really analyzed those data that way yet. I suspect that in most instances, when the 35-year-old is doing something quite different from what he was at 26, at 25, that what one would find is there's been inadequate exploration beforehand, and he's stabilized prematurely in something inappropriate. But the kind of case you're suggesting would be is real, that there are such people. They'd be a minority of those who change.
I'm just trying to summarize what you should say. It seems to me that initially a person has to go or could go through each of these stages. Then it would seem that you reach ultimately a point where several of these stages are concurrently operating. In other words, you're stabilizing yourself in one particular area, but as you're stabilizing, you're simultaneously exploring or trying to implement some future change or some future operation.
That's what I meant by these broken lines here. That while a person is behaving, acting, doing things at this stage, let's say, he's actually here. And so when you observe his job, the things he's doing on his job, the related activities, you see that he's maintaining himself. But recognizing that he is getting near the end of, he's approaching, and however near he is, let me put a line a little further along here, that he's nearing the end of the maintenance stage and approaching decline, then presumably he's looking ahead and anticipating retirement, thinking about what he may be doing. Now, one would assume that even here, some attention is being given to retirement. In other words, do I have the right kind of annuity plan or pension plan or kinds of insurance policies that, given my circumstances, I ought to have? So there is some exploring and implementation for retirement even here, but it's minimal after all. Not a whole lot of energy and time and action goes into it. Getting up here, more time and attention, as we were saying in connection with somebody else's point earlier, maybe trying out a vacation in Florida to see if he wants to retire there. He may be considering what it would be like to retire in the community in which he lives. In the New York suburbs where I live in a suburb that is a real town, and that it has all kinds of people in it, and a fair number of older people, when they retire, stay there, even though quite a few of them are wealthy enough so that they could move to Florida, or maybe they spend, they really live in Montclair, but they go to Florida during the cold weather season. On the other hand, there are other New York suburbs in which there are hardly any older people. They are typically the executive turnover suburbs, and people live there while they're raising families. They move there when they start, when they have their first child, and they move away either when the children are grown up and they move into apartments, or they move away when they retire. So someone at this point presumably would be thinking, well, now what kind of town am I living in, and do I want to keep on living here? Would it make sense to keep on living here after I retire? Well, that's anticipation. And a little later, I will get into a classification of exploratory behavior that I think will be useful here. But there is a kind of mental anticipatory exploration that goes on. And so this is a good point. No one is ever in just one stage. He's usually, in some degree, doing a number engaging in a number of these kinds of behavior. And the only justification for talking in terms of stages and attaching these descriptive labels to them is the matter of the frequency and the importance of a given kind of behavior at a given age. And exploratory behavior is most frequent here, and establishment behavior is the most common here, even though one observes the others going on. A word or two on, thought or two on exceptions. In our 36-year-olds, one of the most interesting and solid and mature men that I interviewed, a number of us obviously got out in the field and did the work, but I always like to have the hands-on experience myself too, so I did a substantial amount of the interviewing. One of the most mature and competent and effective men I interviewed is a state trooper, not a genius by any means, I guess maybe an IQ of 110, bright but not ultra bright kind of a person, thoughtful, good observer. His values all seemed good. He was, if I ever get involved with a state trooper, I hope it's somebody like that man. We haven't taught our subjects our language. One reason we're kind of slow in getting our monographs, our books out on the study, is we don't want them reading them before we finish studying. We don't want to affect their careers while studying. Vocational maturity, for example, is not part of the vocabulary of our subjects, of the people we're studying. But this man in the interview spoke up and said, it took me a long time to mature vocationally. He said, it wasn't until I was somewhere around 26 or 28 that I began to have some notion of what I really wanted to do, where I fitted into the occupational scheme. He had a reasonably good work history before that, but a sort of miscellaneous hodgepodge work history. Nothing bad about it, except it really hadn't been leading him anywhere very much and hadn't done anything that grabbed him. And then at around 26 or 28, I've forgotten at the moment how, he became aware of opportunities in the state police and took the exam and qualified. And at 36, was very happy in his work and doing well in it, well established, really in the establishment stage. Well, see, here's somebody who was exploring at least up to about here. Didn't begin establishment until there. Another subject was I'd characterize him as a drifter. And this was a young man who did well in science in high school and who went on to college and majored in science and graduated with reasonably good grades in science. But when he finished college, he really didn't know what he wanted to do. He got a job teaching science, really just for lack of something better. He graduated with a science degree. What could he do? Well, obviously there are a number of things he could do in industry and so on. But he and the pharmaceutical labs close by where he might have worked and so on, took a job as a science teacher, not because he had any real call to teaching, but just drifted into it. It was what somebody offered him. There was a shortage of science teachers there. Didn't like it. After a year, he gave it up and went into the Air Force. This was during the Korean War, as a maintenance officer, thinking that he'd make a career in the Air Force. When he completed his first tour as a reserve officer, he had decided this wasn't for him, and he left the Air Force. He went back and took up farming for a couple of years, and gave that up. That wasn't right. He took another science teaching job as a stopgap job. He really didn't want to teach science. He knew that already, but didn't know what else to do. And so here was a job, so he drifted into it. Didn't like that, didn't do very well at it. Took a job as a clerk in a jewelry store. Didn't really want to be a clerk. Shifted to another jewelry store where, as a clerk again, hoping he might get to be a manager. no possibility, at least it never happened there. At age 36, he was giving up his job clerking in a jewelry store, getting married to a woman who was working, and then they were going to move to the city where she lived and look for a job in a jewelry store, hoping that he'd find a jewelry store where maybe he could have a chance to become a manager. In other words, he was still literally going where the tides took him at age 36. So it's really even flattering to call that the exploratory stage, isn't it? He was in the exploratory stage still, in terms of our definitions, but his behavior was not exploration. It was drifting. It wasn't even floundering. It's easier for us to think about and talk about the people who are more like us. So, you know, these come to the surface. But obviously the majority of our subjects did not go to college, because this was the whole cross section of the town. These are all the eighth and ninth graders in this city of 23,000. In other words, 265 boys. And so there were the low IQs and the high IQs, the poor and the rich, and all the in-betweens in the usual proportions. Here's one, for example, who was at 25, he was a truck driver in a construction, working for a construction company. There are lower level jobs than that, but that is certainly not a high level job. He was blue collar, didn't get a job as a truck driver right out of high school. He had the usual sequence of the 18-year-old getting into the labor market, shifting from one relatively inconsequential job to another. I can't at the moment bring back exactly what they were, but something like a soda jerk in a drugstore, jumper on a truck. Anybody not know what a jumper is on a truck? He literally jumps off and on a truck. He rides in the truck and jumps off to deliver packages, jumps back on again as the truck moves on. He's not the driver. That's the kind of job that may lead to him becoming a driver after he's older and more mature. You know, the employer won't trust him to drive a truck at age 18, unless it's a relatively inconsequential truck and rather irresponsible employer. Maybe the 18-year-old would be good. I mean, this is the popular attitude. So the 18 or 19-year-old usually has a sequence of jobs like this. He's also usually not big and strong enough in the eyes of people to wield a pick and shovel. He doesn't have the heavy skill jobs. He has the light, heavy unskilled jobs. He has the light unskilled jobs, and the relatively irresponsible isn't the word, but not responsible, semi-skilled jobs. So this fellow had that kind of a sequence. Then after he got a bit older and a bit huskier, no longer a stripling, and employers would trust him, then he had a chance to drive a truck, and he got a job as a truck driver working for a construction company. He was stable in this job at age 25, but he still had ambitions and was engaging in instrumental behavior, because he thought he wanted to buy his own truck eventually and be a contracting trucker, not just an employed truck driver. And that if he could then accumulate enough capital that way, then he might buy a second truck and hire somebody else and build up his local, this not across country, of course, this is a local trucking business. That's one case. Here's another, a boy from a low socioeconomic status family, Italian, who, when he graduated from high school, had no idea of what he wanted to do. No goals, no ideas on how to get to any goal. and uncle suggested he get a job, that he apply for a job in the local leather goods factory. They make pocketbooks. I think it rejoices in the name of Classy Leather Goods or something like that. And so at his uncle's suggestion, there being an opening there that his uncle who worked there knew about, he went and applied to Classy Leather Goods, and he got a job as a floor boy. How many know what a floor boy is? One or two. You can probably guess. He's one who works around on the floor. He carries leather to the people who are doing the cutting and the sewing and so on. He's, in a sense, a messenger boy carrying materials from one worker to another, or from supply to worker. Lowest level kind of job, obviously. Go get me so much of thus and such from the stockroom was the kind of thing he was doing. So he worked there for a while. They had nothing much in the way of employment security in that factory. He wasn't building up any kind of equity and recognized it. The one goal he had was security. The type of work really wasn't too important to him, but he did want more security than people in the leather goods factory had. One of the secure places for employment in this town is the state hospital, because obviously it's civil service, and business in state hospitals doesn't go up and down very much, doesn't fluctuate very much, unless it happens to be a TB hospital. That's the one kind in which there has been fluctuation. So this was, this being a metal hospital, employment was secure. So he applied there and got a job. What was available was the laundry. So he got a job working in the laundry. This gave him security that he liked. But he also had the idea that security isn't enough. How much you make while you're secure is important too. So he began to look around, how can you make more? Within the working in the mental hospital and with the security that the mental hospital can give you. And he found that while there wasn't much of a career ladder, so to speak, in the laundry, in the kitchen there might be. Because if he got a job as a helper in the kitchen, the dishwasher and whatnot, that maybe he could learn something about cooking. So he got a job, the lowest level kitchen helper job, which was at the same level as his laundry job, pay scale wise, with the notion that maybe he could on the side, incidentally, when time permitted, learn something about cooking. And he did explore enough to find out, see, this is a bit of exploratory behavior, isn't it? He did explore enough to find out that the cook, the chief cook, was willing to give incidental training.